Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. Concluding our February's theme of Love Will Find a Way, I am excited to welcome singles coach Nina Edward. Nina is a licensed therapist with 22 years of experience and the author of 4 self-help books for singles and couples. Her books include Be Your Own Dating Service, published in 1994, is still as popular as ever, as her latest book, Temptation of the Single Girl, The 10 Dating Traps You Must Avoid, is the latest buzz in the single world. Nina has been featured in various national magazines and newspapers, and she has also been on radio shows hundreds of times and has appeared on various national and regional television shows. What I feel is that regardless whatever and how you spend your Valentine's Day this past Sunday, you can always pick up some special tips on how to spice up your love life, as Nina and I will be discussing romance, love, and the single life. Good morning, Nina. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you?
Good morning, Johnny. I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm excited. I think it's a wonderful close-out for our February show, being that, there are a bunch of singles out there, including myself, and we can certainly use some expert tips on how to proceed with our life for the rest of the year. But let us begin by talking about your life's journey. Please walk us through your life from childhood to the present moment.
Well, Johnny, we were talking a little bit before we went on the air about how life experience, I believe that it shapes us, and you have people who are experts who have had really good life experiences and figured it out very early on, and married their soulmate in college, and at my age now I would have probably a handful of grandkids and all that kind of stuff. But that wasn't my life experience. That's not really where I come from. I come from an experience of a family of divorce and growing up with a single mother and a grandma who was a huge part of my life and a positive influence on me. But pretty early on, because my early experiences were not always as positive as I wanted, but I realized very early in life that I think people need help from others in order to deal with the pain of whatever their individual traumas and life dramas were. And I believe in the concept of people who have kind of been there being the person to lead someone out of pain. And so what I come from is the perspective of a kind of wounded childhood that became my teacher. Really my experiences were my teacher so that I could help other people move forward and create the life that they want, because, you don't get a choice about what happens to you as a child, but you get a tremendous amount of choice about what happens to you as an adult.
Right.
So, long, rocky path for me, but I'm happy to say that I've been with my husband for over 10 years. We're very happily married, and I don't have children, but I'm a great aunt to 2 children who are my surrogate grandkids.
Fantastic. That sounds good. Being Your Own Dating Service is a great title. What inspired you to write this book?
Well, early in my career as a therapist, I thought, it looks like a fair amount of the work that I'll be doing is going to be with couples and relationship work, because I was really drawn to that. But I found that it was very difficult to help couples who were already married, and sometimes it would become very apparent to me that they probably shouldn't have gotten married. They really weren't a good match. And it's hard to, it's very difficult to make that come out okay for someone. No matter how much therapy you give them, if it's fundamentally not a good match, then it's always a compromise. And so I thought, wouldn't it be great if there was a way to help people understand what makes a good match, what makes a good marriage, and help people make better choices when they're single and dating so that they wind up in better relationships. And so that's how I started out, and I started teaching workshops for singles, and that led into starting to think about this book, Be Your Own Dating Service, and writing that book and eventually getting it published.
Do you find that there's a lot of times when you go through this, it's also a part of you that as you go through, how we live our life and then we realize that, wow, this is based on our personal experience that we'd like to share?
Oh, well, pretty much. Mm-hmm. If you read my books and you see the mistakes, mm-hmm. just think, okay, that's what Nina did, because that's really what I did. I did every single one of them. And some of them more than once.
Uh-huh. Well, we live and learn.
I'm a slow learner, not a fast learner. I wish I could say I was a quick study, but when it comes to relationships and life, you know, it seems like I repeated some of those mistakes more than once before I finally got it and, you know, kind of, okay, I'm having that V8 moment. I think I get it now.
You know, it reminded me of a movie that actually one of my late moms had referred me. This was years ago, titled The Mirror Has Two Faces with Barbara Streisand and Jeff Bridges and George Segal. You remember that
mm-hmm.
movie? It's several years back. It's about...
Uh-huh.
Where you know you just have to go out there and date. That's it. You know,
mm-hmm.
you can't if you decide to cop out. You know, say you know and leave the dating scene and say okay, no, that's it. It's over for me. Then it's a different path, but at the same time, you will enjoy it. You know, enjoy that moment, so to speak. and no matter whatever mistakes or good things in life, you know, that you go through, enjoy the moment. And I thought of, you know, the fact that we would talk about we all make mistakes and we all have to learn from experiences and stuff like that. But until we expose ourselves, you know, be vulnerable, we can't actually win, I guess, in this case, you know.
I always say you have to break some eggs to make an omelet.
There you go.
You know, you really cannot understand truly what love is about and what it
mm-hmm.
takes to have a relationship with real love without putting yourself at risk, without being vulnerable. But
right.
I think there are smart ways for you. There is a time and a place for you to be vulnerable that's good and it promotes the growth of your soul.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a time and a place to be vulnerable when it's just downright stupid to be vulnerable.
That's
true. You really open yourself up to situations and to people that are fundamentally not good for you.
Right.
And learning the difference between that
mm-hmm.
makes
mm-hmm.
all the difference, because then your dating experiences start to become about growth and development
right.
and deepening who you are and deepening your understanding of yourself and life and love and what it takes, rather than your experiences being about getting so emotionally pulverized that it takes you years to recover from something.
Right. That's true.
Yeah.
That's very
mm-hmm.
true. Is there such a thing as the one?
No, I don't think there is the one. It makes absolutely no sense that there would only be one right person for you on a planet of almost 7 billion people. What would be the odds that you would ever meet them? I see people who come from very small towns, and somehow, even though the only people they've ever known is the people they've grown up with
right.
in a very small town, somehow they manage to find somebody that's right for them.
Right.
So I think that the truth is there are many, many people who are potentially right for you. And thank goodness that is the way life is designed, because, you know, life is unpredictable, and you can find somebody today who's absolutely wonderful you, and you may be married to that person for 25 years and they die of cancer. And
right.
are you then going to say, well, I'll never love again?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the nature of life is that we're meant to love and be loved.
Right.
So, yeah, there are many right people for us.
Okay. That's a good, certainly a good sign, you know.
Yeah.
But again, on the other hand, it seems like why does love seem so hard for some of us? I
mm-hmm.
mean, it's like
yeah.
we try and try and try it, and it's like it seems to elude us in some ways.
It is, you know. But the way I see it is that love itself isn't hard. It's a natural part of life. We're meant to love and be loved.
Mm-hmm.
What I think is difficult is making good choices, and
mm-hmm.
that is where people confuse sex with love
mm-hmm.
or attention with love
mm-hmm.
or filling up the hole in your soul with something that seems like love.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are confusing and difficult and hard. But you begin to get, I think, some clarity about real love when you stop trying to get it from other people
mm-hmm.
and instead begin with yourself and work outward from there. So what I mean by that is I think you have to make your own well-being the first priority. You have to put that ahead of mm. the desire or attraction to another person. And so what you do is you seek a relationship that's a reflection of your relationship with yourself. So if you care about yourself, then you seek a relationship that is a caring relationship. If you are respectful of yourself, you seek a respectful relationship. You want that relationship to be a context for growth. Now, before people get all too starry-eyed, I want them to know that it's not that you'll never be disappointed in love. And in fact, love is full of disappointment because you share a relationship with another flawed human being. I mean, my husband is the most wonderful thing that's ever happened to me, but honestly, sometimes I just want to spit nails. I get so mad at him over stupid things, and it's just irritation and it's annoyance and it's just life. And, you know, why doesn't he read my mind and know my every want and desire every minute of the day? I just don't understand that. I mean, he doesn't understand why I don't read his mind either sometimes. But that's when we're when we're being our flawed human beings, human selves, and we're and we let each other down because of that. So disappointment and being let down is a part of a normal love relationship. But what makes it work is that even though you are, you know, we're both fundamentally flawed people, but what we know is I know that he has my best interest at heart, and he knows I have his best interest at heart. He truly loves me as I love him. He is just as willing to work on it with me as I am. And so, therefore, our relationship is a vehicle for growth and development as human beings, and that is what the goal is.
Now, do you feel like our growing up years, that is, you know, our childhood experiences influence and create the subconscious pattern that affects our future relationships?
The short answer is yes, but let me explain. I think as long as you are unconscious, in other words, you don't operate with a lot of self-awareness, you don't do much self-reflection, you just kind of barrel forward in life, acting and reacting off of how you feel, whatever the emotion is of the moment, then yeah, you're going to subconsciously act out whatever it is that you experienced in childhood. So if you felt abandoned or neglected, then you'll choose people who abandon or neglect you. If you felt misunderstood, you'll wind up with people who don't get you, and so on and so forth. So I think the goal is to become more self-aware and to stop the mad dash in life, the mad rush to finding the next source of gratification, and rather to stop and self-reflect and to confront whatever those shortcomings were from your childhood, and then learn to forgive yourself and forgive those who let you down or even hurt you. And I think that is the miracle of life, is that, that out of the pain of whatever happened in the past with forgiveness, then we're empowered to move forward, to reach forward and be open again and create something new that's based on whatever it is we learned from those experiences. Not that you're ever going to have your memory erased. That'll still be there, but you can learn from it and you can choose something healthy. And I think at the end of the day, good relationships are a choice. You can, no matter what your background is, choose something healthy going forward and then take the actions and the steps to create that.
That's very true. Well, there's a period of time as we go through life. I mean, you know, you have a situation where, well, I'm a child, maybe you're right, you have limited amount of ability to make your own decisions. But once you are an adult, there's no reason why you use that in the, as an excuse, like to say, because we all can make that conscious decision on where we want to go forward.
Yeah, because, you know, once you cross that line from childhood to adulthood, no matter what happened back there, you know, my choices are mine as an adult.
Nobody, you can't play the blame game, so to speak. You know?
Exactly. Nothing that my parents did to me made me get married the first time at age 21 to someone who was absolutely, totally, completely wrong for me. Nobody made me do that. I made that choice.
Right.
So I have to learn to live with the choices that I make as an adult, and I have to learn how to have those choices inform me and teach me so that I'm continuing to make better choices and not, you know, I don't think it works to be defensive and to say, well, that's not my fault. You know, I'm doing that because of what was done to me and blah, blah, blah. Well, you don't grow from that.
You know, the flip side of it is that you have some situations where you do come from a wonderful family, And the subconscious thing is that I believe the daughters will be looking for that dad kind of a, you know, role model, so to speak, or characteristics in the father. And then the son will be looking for the characteristics for that loving mother in their potential mate. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be great, you know. It's wonderful. if you have a template for what real love is from your family, you have come from a loving and nurturing family, and you have that template, I think you're far more likely to, earlier in life, choose someone who's good for you.
And
now, that doesn't give you a guarantee, because
that's
I still think
that's
you got to work at that relationship, and you can't just take it for granted that it's going to end up like your parents' marriage, and you're going to be married for 50 years happily without you putting anything into it.
Right, because I know in the situations where, you know, I know where I came from and, you know, looking at my family and so forth. Now, technically speaking, regardless of how great it is and so forth, you can be, you know, like the Beavers or whatever, you know, and or like Happy Days, you know, like the Cunningham. I'm sure, that, you know, all of us have some certain amount of dysfunctionality in our family. But having said that, it's true that ultimately that helps us to a certain point, and then as adults we make those conscious decisions to move on what's right, what's wrong, because as we educate ourselves out there and seeing the good, bad, and ugly, we have the conscious decision to make. And so you're right from that perspective. What should we look for in a potential mate then?
Well, I want to boil it down to three things, and those are compatibility, mutual love and respect, and equilibrium.
Okay.
So compatibility means that you share the same values in this, in the same way of life, or very similar. So it's not that one of you wants to live in a cabin in the woods in Montana while the other person wants, you know, craves the urban life. That doesn't work very well. You know, one of you likes to smoke pot every day and won't give it up, and the other one's a health nut who would never touch drugs of any kind. You've got to have basic life compatibility. You have to be able, you know, it's like that old saying, I forgot now where the quote comes from, but it's, if you know, that a fish may love a bird, but where will they live? So you've got to be able to live in life together. And so that means you need to be fundamentally compatible. And that means your spiritual beliefs are aligned.
Right.
The basic things that you want out of life are aligned. And then the second thing, mutual love and respect, really that, you know, is the love that I'm talking about is not the early stage love, which is the falling madly in love and being enchanted by someone. But I'm talking about the kind of love that has deeper roots. The kind when you start peeling back the layers of who you are as people with one another, and you see who you really are, that you still love the person in front of you.
You
don't feel completely disenchanted and
you get to know
them. In fact, your love and respect grows for them as you get to know them better and more intimately. And respect is so important, and we throw that word around without really ever stopping to think about what it really means. And I think that respect is that sense that you are proud of that person. At the end of the day, you still look up to that person even after years and years of being with that person. And that it takes time to get to that kind of love and respect. And people want instant relationships in today's world. You know, add water, voila, you have an instant relationship. I don't think you get to that kind of deep mutual love and respect instantaneously. I think
to me, that's unconditional love. That's to me, when you look at it, there's a difference between tolerating someone and acceptance of someone.
There's a big difference between tolerating and truly accepting. I think love is acceptance.
Right.
At the end of the day, it means that you truly accept the person for exactly who they are and who they are not.
Right.
You're not trying to remake them into something that fits your fantasy.
Right.
They are who they are. And what you get in the beginning is what you will always get. You
it's
cannot,
very true, yeah. And I learned that from experience, unfortunately. No, you know, it's true because it's like there's a love DNA here that you can't change because that's a
yeah.
person's character.
And, exactly
and
right.
So when you go into it, and I've got friends that say, oh, you know, you learn how to tolerate things. And I'm thinking like, okay, tolerance to me is settling. And then what happens is that you can settle for something for some time, and then after a period of time, you're going to fall off that wagon, so to speak, because it's, you know, it goes against who you are.
Well, yeah, let's separate what people are really, what they're saying from what they really mean. So
mm-hmm.
I think, you know, when it comes to tolerance,
mm-hmm.
maybe what they are trying to say is, yeah, there are some things that my loved one does that because I love them so much, I put up with them. I put
mm-hmm.
up with that.
Mm-hmm.
But that is going to be the little things in
correct.
Life.
Correct.
If, you know,
right.
for me, it's my husband has an incredible love of old things and keeping things from way back in his life. And
mm-hmm.
I don't like keeping old things around. And you know, if I could, I would go through his collection of 150 old T-shirts with all these
uh-huh.
emblems from all these experiences in his life, and I would ditch all the ones that have the holes
mm-hmm.
in them and the, you know, the yellow stains under
right.
the arms, and
right.
they're just disgusting to me.
Right.
But to him, those things carry his memories,
right?
And they're precious to him. So,
mm-hmm.
So when we recently bought a house and moved into a little bit larger space, so I meticulously
mm-hmm.
washed and folded every one of those T-shirts and stored
mm-hmm.
them in drawers so that if he wants to, he can get them out and wear them
mm-hmm.
or you look at them or whatever. So, yeah, I tolerate his T-shirts. But I don't tolerate him.
Right.
Him I love and respect
mm-hmm.
and I accept.
Mm-hmm.
So do you see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, definitely.
If people are talking about tolerating who the person is, they're in trouble.
Right.
You can't do that. But the little habits and things that annoy you about someone, absolutely. And when you really love someone, you do tolerate those things.
Well, that would be compromising, though. That's different. I think,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
that's about, you know, you have his, mine, and ours. But tolerating
yeah.
someone, to me, it's a harsh word. Again, this is all about linguistic here, and I'm certainly
yes.
no English expert, but
yeah.
it's just the buzz of it, you know, the thought of it. You know, wait a minute, if you have to tolerate someone,
right.
then you're settling. Compromising is a different thing. It really doesn't,
yeah.
it bothers me, but it really doesn't bother me. Who cares?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
If it stays on that side of the, you know, the house or the bed or whatever, you know, it's okay.
Well, I think that
yeah.
what people are tempted to do that doesn't work is
mm-hmm.
to settle for someone who they are fundamentally at odds about something very important.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, one of you wants children.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
you want to be a parent. You've always wanted that. You
right.
You can't wait to be a mom or a dad.
Mm-hmm.
And then you date someone and fall in love with someone who has no desire for children.
Right, right.
Well, now you're settling.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've picked someone that you are fundamentally incompatible with, and you're going to try to settle for that, and you're going to try to tolerate that.
Right.
And that is a future marriage therapist vacation home. That's what that is.
Right.
Because they're going to spend hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of therapy. And at the end of the day, the one who doesn't want children is either going to have to cave in and have children when they don't want
right.
them.
Right.
Or the other one who does want children is going to have to cave in and
right.
spend the rest of their lives in regret because they don't have any children.
Right.
That just fundamentally doesn't work.
Well, let's talk about the third thing you mentioned about, equilibrium.
Equilibrium.
Mm-hmm.
That basically means your relationship is balanced. You
okay.
both want it in equal measure.
Mm-hmm.
It's not one of you madly in love while the other, and, you know, and desperately trying to win the other person over while the other one is just merely
right.
in strong like and
mm-hmm.
kind of going along because, after all, it's better than nothing. And,
mm-hmm.
well, sure, if you want to drive this whole relationship, I'll follow along with you because I'm kind of tired of looking anyway and I haven't found anything else any better, and you are a nice person, so okay.
Yeah, right. But that
doesn't
comes
work
back
very well.
To that idea of that settling down. That's the thing.
It
that's
is.
The danger.
That's one of the biggest forms of settling I see people doing.
Okay.
Is hooking up with someone that is not really passionate about them, not really in love with them, and thinking they're going to make it work. That they're going to love enough for the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Or being in denial.
Right.
You know, I see people in a lot of denial sometimes. They're friends. Can see that the person that they're with is not that into them, but
mm-hmm.
they can't see it. They're in denial about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree with that. And you know, before the show, we talked a little bit about we have a mutual friend in the sense that I'm in the ballroom dancing community and so forth. And people often ask me, you know, like, well, what if you meet someone that doesn't dance? And I said, you know, if she doesn't really doesn't dance, period, zero, nada, and that doesn't work. But at the same time, if she just enjoys being out there, she don't have to be a terrific dancer, but she enjoys the music, the camaraderie, the dancing, the social life, you know, from that perspective, I'm okay with that. And that's
yeah.
part of that compromise, I think. She
I
don't
think
have to be a world-class dancer, you know.
Right, it's about being interested in your world.
Precisely.
So
that's a big difference.
That's right. So if she cares about you, she's going to care about what you care about in your world. So she's going to want to, even if she doesn't end up being a big dancer, she'll come and she'll support you in dancing, and she'll be there and she'll applaud.
And she enjoys that, and she will enjoy that in the way because, like say, it's the flavoring of it. Rather than I don't need her to be, you know, good or whatever you want to call it, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just more of like, okay, I'm flavoring yours and you're flavoring mine, and that's what, to me, that sort of compatibility, the equilibrium and balance that you're talking about.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, let's your book, Be Your Own Dating Service, came out in 1994. The internet dating sites are pretty much at its infancy.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward to today, you can actually just virtually meet anyone anywhere on the internet and befriend them long before you meet them in person.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the strengths of internet dating?
Well, the one thing I want people to know is internet dating is like a tool. Think of a tool like a hammer.
Mm-hmm.
So if you use that tool wisely, you can build something really great with it. But if you use it the wrong way, you could do damage, you could even destroy something.
Right.
Internet dating is a tool just like that. It's a tool to meet others, period. And you do need a system and a process to use it wisely. And I'm in the process of writing an e-book called Internet Dating for the Savvy Single, which I'm going to be publishing for those who are on my subscriber list. So you might want to, after this show, go and sign up for my subscriber list so you can get it later. But what you do is you use internet dating like a tool in order to meet others. That's what you use it for. So, you know, for instance, you don't expect a miracle from it. It's not like you go online and post your profile and then your magic perfect person shows up overnight. That's not how it works. It really is a process. It's an ever-changing population.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, sometimes people say to me, well, I tried internet dating and it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's like saying, I tried to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
I put out a resume a couple of times, you
mm-hmm.
know, a few times. Nobody hired me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So forget it. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
It, just like anything else in life, with internet dating, it's a process. It takes time. It takes a different amount of time for some people than others. And because the population is ever-changing, you have to look at it this way. Somebody new is coming online today that wasn't there yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And that person may be right for you. So if you quit yesterday, if you took your profile down and you said, forget this doesn't work, I'm not doing it anymore, guess what? You just passed up someone who might have been right for you.
Right.
So you don't expect miracles. You use use a SMART process, you're persistent, and then the other thing is that I think it's very important not to keep an online relationship online for more than a few days.
Mm-hmm.
So I see people who sometimes fall in love with someone by exchanging emails endlessly.
Okay.
Never talking to the person, never meeting them in person.
Mm-hmm.
Just thinking that the profile that they've read online is who the person is, and that the, you know, the sweet, seductive, or charming messages they get over email is who the person is.
Because you, I mean, we are creatures of what you call it, creativity in a way, or imagination. So, and you're right, because someone, you know, you fall in love with a perceived, you know, it's like reading a romance novel, though.
That's right.
Isn't it?
It becomes a fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is people fall in love with a fantasy if they keep the relationship online.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, do you want gratification? Do you want pleasure? Or do you want a long-term healthy relationship? So what you have to do is pull the relationship offline as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Don't assume that their profile is who they really are. Do your due diligence. You know,
mm-hmm.
check them out. If you do meet the person and you think that this has the potential to be a real relationship, I recommend background checks. You know, really do your due diligence. Ask lots of questions and don't be afraid to go deep.
Mm-hmm.
Follow someone's comment all the way until you understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone says, well, I was married for 25 years and we got divorced, it just didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to want to ask, what do they mean by that? You know,
mm-hmm.
What do you mean it didn't work out? What didn't work out?
25 years is a long time.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
And why would you just leave it on the surface level?
Mm-hmm.
When people say things about their lives, they're really issuing you an invitation. And the invitation is, do you want to go deeper and really get to know me? Or do
mm-hmm.
you want to stay on the surface and just have a little cardboard cutout picture of who you think I am?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I say that relationships are about intimacy, which means into me see. That's what intimacy is.
Mm-hmm.
So ask the questions. What do you mean by that? What happened? Who was the one who called it quits?
Mm-hmm.
And why? I think you should ask someone very early on, have you ever cheated on anybody?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, how old were you? Well, if the person was 17 and in high school and they cheated on someone but they never have since then, I think you can get past that.
Right.
But if they had an affair on the person they were married to
2 years ago, that's
you
a
know,
different story. Yeah.
Then you've got to wonder. you got to put up a big red flag and say, could be a character issue.
That's right. That's right. Very interesting. Well, where should you go to meet someone, and what's the best way to meet someone to date?
Well, first of all, let's get some perspective.
Mm-hmm.
We live on a planet with over 7 billion people.
Mm-hmm.
There's people everywhere. So when people say to me, I don't know where to meet anybody, I don't believe that. There are people everywhere. In our country alone, there are over 228 million adults. About half of them are single.
Right.
And half of that is the other gender.
Right.
So there's no excuse for not meeting other people. Unless you are keeping yourselves out of the social milieu, and that's
right.
a choice.
Right.
It's like anything else in life that's worthwhile, it takes effort. You got to get out. You got to socialize if you want to meet other people. You cannot sit in your house and order out for pizza
mm-hmm.
and think that the pizza delivery person is going to be your prince or princess charming, just waltz right up to your door and say, here's your pizza, and oh, by the way, would you marry me?
Right.
Didn't work that way. So what you have to do is you have to get out and meet people. And so what is the best way to meet someone? I think it's pursuing common interests. You know, in your case, it's ballroom dancing. That's
mm-hmm.
that's one of your probably, you may have other interests as well.
Mm-hmm.
But go and involve yourself in things that you love. If it's the arts, if it's sports, if it's
mm-hmm.
dancing, if it's exercise, if it's whatever it is, get out and get around other people who share your interests.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, use internet dating. I think it's
mm-hmm.
a powerful tool. It's amazing to me
mm-hmm.
that people can sit at their computer in the evenings and work this system
mm-hmm.
and actually meet people who are really eligible people for relationships. You know, I have friends who have married their soulmates, meeting them online.
Wow, that's
fantastic.
It
happens every
yeah.
day.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, there are, you know, cases where you do have some of the horror stories and all that, but that's far more less in occurrence than the good news. I guess in some ways you don't hear a lot of the good news. You tend to hear about the bad news.
Well, that is because, you know, let me tell you why people get into trouble using internet dating. It's no different than if you met the, you know, 20 years ago, people got into trouble because they went out to bars and met people.
Nine.
You know, so you can get into trouble with relationships no matter where you meet them. And the way that you get into trouble
right.
is that you make assumptions about who it is you think they are. You fail to do any due diligence. You rush into the relationship without paying any attention to all the warning signs.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that get people in trouble.
Right.
And also, you know, when you're meeting someone for the first time, don't get your hopes up so high.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
be realistic. Realize that until you are eyeball to eyeball with someone, mm-hmm. you have no idea if there's any chemistry, if there's any compatibility,
right.
if they're remotely who they appeared to be online. So before you actually meet someone, you need to keep it very simple and very straightforward and finding out a few things about them, but then quickly setting up that lunch or coffee date so you can go physically meet them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And don't really get too excited about it until you've done that.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, doing it, you know, from a, there are steps and strategies you have to do. It's not like, because what you have is that you cannot be, for a guy or a girl, to be a hopeless romantic because you, just because you read this awesome portfolio,
absolutely.
You create this fantasy person.
That's
and you fall
right.
In love or perceived to have fallen for this perceived character that you have created. So to speak.
Exactly. Instead of falling in love with what is in your mind that you've created,
right.
Take the time to find out who the real person is.
Mm-hmm.
And don't be so wound up about who they are and so hopeful that you put yourself immediately in denial.
Mm-hmm.
So you walk into the restaurant and you go and sit down, and lo and behold, he is the most handsome man you've seen in so, so long.
Mm-hmm.
And you're sitting there looking at his left hand, and you can see the tan line where his wedding ring goes. But, oh, that's probably an old tan line. I'm pretty sure that that's there from 2 years ago when he got divorced like he says he did.
Uh-huh.
Come on.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I think I just want to shake people and say, get real, you know, get real, wake up, be in the real world, be attentive,
right.
be aware. Don't walk around with a closed heart or a closed mind, but on the other hand,
mm-hmm.
don't walk around with a big V painted on your chest
mm-hmm.
for victim, you know,
right.
looking for a place to happen. Be savvy about it.
Well, you know, I want to fast forward here to your current book, Temptation of the Single Girl, and you talk about the 10 dating traps that you must avoid, and I know you mentioned, I guess I presume, a few of this when we are talking, but please tell us a little bit more about that. How do you come up with the title, and what are the 10 dating traps?
Well, the reason I decided to call it Temptations of the Single Girl is...
Mm-hmm.
In a nutshell, I think women as a whole want to be in love with someone special, and they want it to lead to marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But I've found that a lot of single women today, most of them, are I think, presented with multiple temptations
mm-hmm.
that lead them off of the path to what it is that they really want.
Mm-hmm.
So in the top three dating temptations, I'll just hit the top three and cover a little bit of ground on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the top three are getting sexual too soon,
mm-hmm.
rushing into relationships, and taking the lead.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to talk about each of those?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, getting sexual too soon, by far the number one mistake that women make
mm-hmm.
in dating today is getting sexual too soon. And why that is a mistake is because when a woman meets a guy and goes out with him a couple of times and then goes to bed with him. She doesn't
right.
yet know him very well. So first of all, she hasn't really established his true character. He may be a good guy. He may not be a good guy.
Right.
Well, instantly she's put herself at risk.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is that men and women are wired very differently with regard to sex.
Mm-hmm.
And for women, sex is not just sex.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what they say, and I've had lots of women tell me, well, yeah, it can be just sex, but I disagree wholeheartedly because what I see women doing is telling themselves it's just sex, but the truth is they wake up the next morning and there has been a bonding occurrence. I mean, there's no other way to put it. She's waking up the next morning dreaming about spending the whole weekend with him, thinking about meeting his friends next week, and then his family the week after that, and going away on a trip together after that, and one thing leads to the next, and the next, and we'll probably be engaged in about 6 months, and then a year from now we'll be planning our wedding. I mean, that is how women are wired, and we have a tendency as women to be in denial about that. And to pretend to ourselves that it doesn't matter that much, I can be casual, I can take it easy, and I can let this thing develop, and so what if we just slept together and be okay? But the truth is she's already attached to him. But men are not wired the same way. A guy is much more capable of sleeping with a woman and not necessarily getting all that bonded or attached to her. He can wake up the next day and be thinking about entirely different things. He's thinking about getting together with his buddies and going to do something he wants to do, and how quickly can he shake her off without hurting her feelings too much. And secondly, a guy can sleep with a woman and spend that kind of time with her and still be checking her out. He's still thinking about whether she's the one. He's not sure yet. So because we're wired so differently that way, then what a woman finds is that she's off balance. She now wants this relationship a lot more than he does. And if she wants it more than he does, how do you think she's going to behave?
She's just going to start creating things.
Imagine she now wants this more than he does. He goes off to be with his buddies and doesn't call her for 3 days.
Right.
Well, at some point, what do you think she's going to do?
I imagine she's going to start pursuing him.
That's right. Now she's going to fall into the temptation of taking the lead. Now she's going to send him that little text message, hey, where are you? What are you doing? You know. Oh, I was just thinking about you. Maybe we could meet up for drinks tonight with some of our friends. You know, she's trying to play it cool and trying to make it look like she's not desperately pursuing him. But I guarantee when he gets that text message, his stomach drops. He's like, oh, no. Oh, I didn't call her, and now she's calling me. And I'm like, oh, man, what am I going to do? He doesn't want to be a bad guy if he's a decent guy. He doesn't want to be the bad guy. You know, he doesn't want to be the jerk who basically used her for sex and wants nothing to do with her. So in order to salvage his ego around the fact that he's not a jerk, then he'll eventually respond and ask her out again. So guess what that communicates to her?
He's into me.
He's into me. Look
right.
at that. He asked me out. You know, this is really great. He asked
this
me
is
to
good.
Over
it's
to
moving
his
in the right direction.
This is moving in the right direction, man. See there, all he needed was a little nudge. I knew that's all he needed was a nudge. Men need a little help that way. That's a common myth that I hear women expressing. Is that somehow he needs to be told that I'm interested. Of course, the fact that you spent all night making passionate love with him didn't tell him you were interested,
Well, but you know why, though? I think, well, it goes on the flip side, too, because what happens is that there is a difference between making love and having sex. Okay, and people do tend to put a wall up in between, and I'm not saying the guys do, obviously the guys do more of that than the women do. But there is a big difference between the two. And from a guy, speaking from a guy's perspective, I got a friend of mine that asked me one time, you know, about my certain relationship, and I'm sharing this on the air, I mean, God forbid, but the But the bottom line comes down to, and I'm saying, you know, well, let me put it this way. There's a big difference knowing that when you're making love with a woman versus having sex.
Mm-hmm.
And then and from a guy's perspective, and you know this person is not serious.
Right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. So from the other side of the equation, you know, and so, but I mean, I got to stand up for some of those guys out here, you know. But it's it goes both ways. I'm telling you because I have been in situations like that where then you realize that you know, hey, she's not, you know, she has a different perspective in her life. Not that she's that, you know, she's a guy in a woman's, you know, body or anything like that, but
right.
But she is on a different you know, she have a different motive.
Like what?
Like what?
Yeah.
I would say, you know, she is able to fall in love with someone for, say, the material things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her agenda is a little bit different. It's like the saying would be, you know, like, I think I can easily fall in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's such a thing as, you know, I can fall in love with this guy or with this woman based on, to give you an example, let's talk about a little bit about, like, The Bachelor show and The Bachelorette.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's good? Because I have mixed feelings about that. Because
mm-hmm.
what happens is that you are set up, you know, like all these women trying to get this nice, good-looking hunk, you know, on TV,
mm-hmm.
blah, 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 and all. And then the flip side, of course, all these guys are trying to nail this woman,
mm-hmm.
right? And so, well, from the perspective of, you know, like, okay, this is what she has to offer and everything else, you know, and so forth. So is that really true love? You know, I can fall in love. I could learn how to fall in love with this person. And
well,
I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's
the personal thought that I have.
Yeah, yeah. It really caught, that is the whole problem with people getting sexual too soon, is that they don't really know whether it is about love or about
mm-hmm.
objectification.
Right.
So men objectify women for their sexuality and their beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And women objectify men for their money and perceived power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. But either it doesn't matter whether it is women objectifying men or men objectifying women.
It goes both ways.
It goes both ways. And it's not what real relationships are built upon.
Mm-hmm.
So if a woman uses her sexual, her sexuality and her beauty, if
mm.
she uses that in order to seduce men, I don't think that is any more healthy than a guy using his wealth to seduce a woman.
Right. But on the flip side, though, these people are genuinely thinking that they're in love because I could fall in love with this person, you
right.
see? Because they don't, I mean, that's a big difference with, you know, like, okay, well, I'm seeing him, let me lower my, you know, my dress a little bit, show a little bit more cleavage or whatever.
Exactly.
You know, or from the guy.
Exactly. It's all,
You know, but that is, that's a conscious decision, though. On the other hand.
You know, I was watching The Bachelor last night,
mm-hmm.
And so here's what he said after spending the night with each one of these three women.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, my big question is, what is really going on in the fantasy suites in there?
Right.
Are they really having sex with three different people three nights in a row?
Right.
Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
There's
mm-hmm.
something really not right about that. Who in the world can say that is normal dating? That is not
right.
normal.
Right.
So, but irregardless of whether he's actually having sex with them or just fooling around a little or making out or sleeping or whatever it is, but he
right.
spends the night with three different women. And then what he says the next day just really blows my mind.
Mm-hmm.
He says, well, I've fallen in love with all three of these women.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he says. I am mm-hmm. in love with all three of these women, which makes you wonder, what the heck does he mean by in love?
Precisely, precisely. What is that definition?
Exactly, because
mm-hmm.
I think that the way we want to believe about being in love is that it's something much more deep than lust or enchantment or seduction
mm-hmm.
or any of those things. We want to believe that in love is on the path to real love, that it's
mm-hmm.
it's got some depth to it. But I think that the truth is when you're watching The Bachelor, you are not looking at a depth of love there.
Precisely, yeah.
You're looking at the fact that he's with three different women who have all been around him in varying stages of very little clothing to almost no clothing to in and out of hot tubs and swimming in the ocean and making out and I mean, come on. this is not love at this point.
I believe the intention is good. I mean, the concept and everything else, but it's overall a stage because it's to give an example, because when a guy comes out, or whether it's a girl that comes out, and you're talking about going to places to, you know, to meet someone, okay, the first thing, it's whether we like it or not, we're all creatures of, you know, what we see, we're visual, men
exactly.
and women. More so for men than women, perhaps, but technically
men
speaking.
Men are visual. When it comes to falling in love, men fall in love primarily visually.
Precisely.
And kinetically, meaning the touch.
But
how she looks and then how she touches.
Right.
And women fall in love auditorily primarily and through the written word.
Right.
So
right.
which is why it is that women can very easily be seduced by what if a guy is able to figure out what it is women want to hear and he says what women want to hear, he can easily seduce her. Same thing, women can easily seduce men by, again, making themselves look very physically appealing. So,
right.
So what is what is The Bachelor really about?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's really about trying to get people together for real love.
Right.
I think it's about titillating an audience, don't you?
Oh, no, I agree, because it's all about money-making deal. That's the same thing for The Bachelorette and everything else. So there is a big distinction where, but you do see that out there now. So where you look at that, that is your guide, basically.
Exactly.
Because you're using that as a guide to say, okay, this is how I need to behave. And so, unfortunately, it's not, you know, quite the same. So,
right, and so what women do is they have a tendency to use, if they're using The Bachelor and they're using the way, you know, I think a lot of, especially, you know, as women get older and more mature, I think they figure some of this stuff out, or I hope they do, but especially younger women don't understand that all of this stuff they see in Hollywood is not really, it's not a healthy model for how to conduct yourself in a relationship, and The Bachelor is not a healthy model for how to conduct yourself in a relationship. So if a woman thinks that the pathway to a great relationship is to figure out how to show the most amount of cleavage and the most amount of leg, and you know, that is not the pathway. That will definitely get his interest,
right?
And
right.
it'll definitely get him pursuing you, but not necessarily for love and commitment.
I think
so
it's a combination of everything, though.
Yeah.
I mean, one has to be attracted to, you know, someone else. To really, you know, and that we talk about chemistry, and chemistry can come in all shapes and forms, no question about that.
Well, you
and, go ahead.
I think it's a mistake to confuse chemistry with sex.
That's right.
Because chemistry is really about an attraction on the level of the mind, the heart, the soul, and the physiology.
Right.
It's all levels. That all adds up. The right chemistry is on all of those levels.
And I like the way you phrase it, because that's interesting, because that's the first time that I have chemistry being broken down in sub, you know, it's actually an umbrella or, you know, a grouping of all these, because, and you're right, because that it has to be in sync of the mind, the soul, the spirit together collectively, and the heart, that's the complete package, so to speak. And,
exactly.
And so that's very, very true. Well, how do you attract someone and then keep them interested then?
Well, I don't think that you really have to do anything. I think that's a mistake, is to think that you have to have, you know, this great game plan for how to attract the one that you want.
Okay.
I think that.
So there goes my manual.
I think that let me talk from a man and a woman's perspective, because it is different for the different genders.
Yeah.
So if you're a guy and you meet a woman and you think she's really something else, and you think you want a relationship with her, you want to explore a relationship with her, your job as a man is to take the lead.
Right.
Your job, just like it is in ballroom dance, right?
Right. Someone's got the lead.
Someone's got the lead. And it works out better if men lead than it does if women lead.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is because the way men are wired is that their hearts come alive when they have to pursue the object of their love.
Right.
That's really how it works for them.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you the number of men I've coached over the years that have told me that initially they were very drawn to a woman, but when she started pursuing them,
mm-hmm.
something, the whole process stopped. Their,
mm-hmm.
their hearts just really kind of stopped growing for her.
Right.
Because men are motivated by having a goal and pursuing
mm-hmm.
that goal.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy's job is to take the lead. It is to ask her out, to do it with respect, to
mm-hmm.
call her in advance. Don't wait until the day of or the day before. Call her 3 days in advance at least to ask her out for an evening. Tell her exactly what the evening is going to be. Don't just ask if you can come over and hang out. Do not send her a text message to ask her on a date. That's very
mm-hmm.
low risk, and it signifies that you're kind of weak.
Right, right, right.
Pick up the phone and have a real-world conversation. Take some risk.
Okay. I'm writing all this down now.
Yeah. And so ask her out in advance on a date with an event in mind. So whether it's dinner or whether it's a show or whether it's a ball game or whatever it is, but have an event in mind and tell her what the event is and give her a suggestion of attire so that so that she isn't dressed up in, to the nines when you're in your cutoff.
Right, right.
So, and then the other thing is that if it is a stranger date, meaning that you did not meet each other in a context of knowing a lot of other people in common,
mm-hmm.
but if it's a stranger date, then offer to pick her up, but tell her that you would totally understand if she'd be more comfortable meeting you there. Give her a choice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of women are not comfortable having a man they don't know come to their home.
Mm-hmm.
So offer to meet her there, but tell her that you'd be happy to pick her up. Either way is fine with you. And keep the date fairly short in the beginning. The very first date should ideally be a lunch or coffee date when you've
mm-hmm.
never even met her yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there you progress to the evening dates. And spread your dates out. Don't ask to see her every night of the week. It's
mm-hmm.
overwhelming to her, and it's far too seductive, gets her pulled in too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But that's your job, is to take the lead and to put some thought into coming up with creative dates. You don't have to spend a lot of money, but be
mm-hmm.
creative.
Mm-hmm. I can deal with that. Yeah, that sounds,
yeah.
That's great advice. That's wonderful.
And
that's
the other thing, as a man, your job
mm-hmm.
is to show her that you are attracted to her without having sex with her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's a little tough line to walk. But what I know. I know a lot of guys are, any guys listening right now are going, oh, God, you've got to be joking. And, of course, the big question I get asked by men is, well, what if she's willing?
Right.
And my answer is, so what?
Right.
Because
right.
what you need to know as a man is this. You should never have sex with a woman that you are not willing to have a child with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sounds pretty.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. Good advice. I mean, no, really,
yeah.
I agree with that. I can understand that.
Yeah, because you do not know. I don't
mm-hmm.
care how much you think that you have it handled on the issue of birth control. If men really did have that issue handled, we would not have so many children being born.
Mm-hmm.
That don't have a committed mother and father together.
Mm-hmm.
So don't have sex with anyone that you don't intend to create a child with and that you don't see as your future wife.
Right, right.
All right? So what that means basically is you're going to put off sex for a long, long time. But at the same time, you've got to let her know
right.
by the way that you look at her, by the way you touch her hand, by the way you kiss her goodnight,
mm-hmm.
that you are definitely a man and that you are definitely interested in her sexually.
Very interesting. No, that's wonderful advice. I think that's wonderful. It's very difficult, but then you're right. Once you get over that hump, then you have a different perspective in your mind on how you want to pursue this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and you're very, very right, I think, you know, it's what do you want out of it? And for some of our listeners, we will be getting off the air in about a minute. However, this show is recorded, so you can always listen to the remainder of this conversation. It looks like we're going to go a little bit over our allotted 1 hour on the air, but we're having a wonderful conversation. Nina, are you able to go over like for about 5 minutes or so?
Sure, I can go over a couple more minutes. You bet.
Okay, fantastic. And so, because I do, you know that I want people to know how they can get in touch with you and hire you as a coach.
Well, they won't be able to hire me directly as a coach because I don't directly coach anymore. I do all my stuff through radio and internet and all that. But I do have an on-staff life coach who is very, very good. And so the way that they can engage with me in order to get that coaching is to go to singlescoach.com.
Mm-hmm.
That is my primary website portal. And on that opening page, they will see a little tab that says single coaching, and scroll down to personal coaching and click on that, and you can find out everything about that program. And then the other thing is to, when you get to the website, to join my newsletter subscriber list,
mm-hmm.
and then you'll begin to get my dating tips and relationship secrets over email.
Mm-hmm.
And when I publish my ebook, which is going to be titled Internet Dating for the Savvy Single, you'll get a free copy of that if you are on my subscriber list.
Fantastic. That sounds really good.
Yeah.
Repeat the website again, please.
The website is singlescoach.com, singlescoach.com.
Wonderful.
There's also I also maintain a regular blog and do postings every other day,
mm-hmm.
and you can post your comments and kind of chat it up with other single people about your dating and relationship issues and get some solutions.
Fantastic. As for all guests I have on my show, do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with us this morning?
Yeah, my recipe for living is pretty simple. It's really to be true to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, you have to develop and listen to your own inner compass. There is something in you, and you can call it a higher power, you can call it whatever you want, but there is something in you that is trying to tell you the right way for you to live your life. And I would say, listen to that and honor it.
Nina, that's a great recipe for living. I really appreciate you spending this hour with me. Have a wonderful conversation. I think I learned a lot, and I think people that listen to this show, I think, have a really wonderful time this morning. To all
oh,
our
good.
Listeners.
I hope so, too. I really enjoyed talking with you, too.
It's been wonderful. I think it's certainly one of my most enjoyable shows I've done for a long time.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Me too. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us this morning. We will be off the air for 2 weeks because I have a speaking engagement next Tuesday, February the 23rd, at the 24th Annual Conference for Prevent Child Abuse Texas. And the following week, I'll be out of town on a business trip. Please join me Tuesday morning, March the 9th, with my guest, Amy Mack. She's the head trainer of Camp Gladiator Dallas, and she has actually been on the show in January and invited me to participate in her Gladiator Boot Camp, and I have accepted, and since the beginning of this month, I've enrolled in her program, and we'll be talking about my experiences with Camp Gladiator, and by then, hopefully, talk about how I survived it. For more information about this show, future shows, and for my recipe for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. And thank you for listening. Have a great couple of weeks. And Nina, thank you again and have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.